It'd be my privilege to read to you the word of the Lord. This is what Isaiah sees in chapter 11. A shoot shall come out from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him. That is the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and of fear. His delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt around his waist, and faithfulness the belt around his loins. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the vipers, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the adder's den. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. On that day, the root of Jesse shall stand as a signal to the peoples. The nations shall inquire of him, and his dwelling shall be glorious. This is the word of the Lord. A picture of the kingdom is currently developing in our home, and it happens in the bedroom of our 2-year-old daughter. We can hear her way late at night. In fact, I heard her all through nap time, up beyond her bedtime, laughing and giggling, instructing and shushing, ordering and responding. She runs inside her crib her own little kingdom. In the morning, we'll hear it again, up before it's necessary, up way before it's necessary. She is master of her domain. The creatures in her crib have become her closest friends. You're probably familiar with her friends. They go by the names Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, Pluto, Marshall. Then there's one that you don't know, Chase. You know, maybe you don't know. Chase and Marshall are from Paw Patrol. They're really important in the life of toddlers. And then there's Baby Little Bear. You don't know Baby Little Bear because that's Hadley's own name for her Baby Little Bear. And a Cabbage Patch doll named Jesse Eve. These are the inhabitants of her kingdom. Together, in the imagination of a child, these stuffed animals come to life and they dance around. They go to sleep at her command. They play hide and seek, always hiding where she knows where to find them. And providing hours of entertainment for their 2-year-old owner, she sleeps with them every single night, often on either side of her head. And she will pray for them, taking the hands of her 2-year-old little paws over the top of Mickey's ears, and she'll say a blessing for Mickey's head. She did that the other night. Other times, she'll just request prayers for her closest friends. She did that too, Alice. Pray for Mickey, Daddy. Pray for Mickey. Okay. This is quite the image that Hadley gives us of her domain. It's her own peaceable kingdom. I don't have it in me to tell Hadley that one day that this will change. That one day those dolls and stuffed animals will be replaced by real people and real animals. And there will come a time where laughter is replaced by tears and joy is replaced by struggle. I don't have it in me to tell Hadley that one day there will be people that hurt her, that break her heart. Better not be any of your kids, okay? I don't know. I was just looking for any parent that had kids the similar age of Hadley, and so I just, nothing to do with Ezra at all. Oh, man, I need to resign. Okay. Yeah, back to script. Woo! Yeah, where was it? And there will be people that she hurts and people that she breaks their heart. My daughter will be no saint either. There will be friendships gained and friendships lost. Here we go, back to script. Whew. There's going to come a time where she discovers animals that scare her, like spiders and stuff, petrify her even. There will be times where she doesn't feel safe, where she doesn't lie down in a soft bed of friends and laugh herself to sleep. I'm not sure when we lose this innocence, but at some point we all discover the real world that's awake outside our cribs. At some point we all wake up to a world that is not at peace, that is in fact wake up to souls that are not at peace either. Our very real worlds, the ones we live at, our very real souls, the ones we live in, are at war. At some point, we grow out of our cribs and old enough to see that this eye for an eye world does not know mercy. One day, like you and I, Hallie will greet this world, and it will sting like alcohol on an open wound. It will sting because it will be so unfamiliar to the peaceable kingdom she runs inside her crib, where all of her friends dance to her command and cuddle inside her arms and always hide right where she knows where to find them, waiting to be lapped into the arms of a laughing, joy-filled child. One day, her innocence will wake to meet the real world with its threats of war and violence, margins of poverty, marks of insecurity, and shadows of brokenness. We know, right? We've met that real world. One day, Hadley will come out of her crib. I suppose that is where Isaiah is when we come across him in chapter 11. Isaiah has come out of his crib. He's come to meet a world that is not at peace. He's come face to face with the real world. And here is the greed of the powerful and mighty. Here is the blood-thirsting violence of global empires and the vulnerability and fear of upheaval, of losing everything in a time of war. In chapter 11 of Isaiah, the prophet is fully awake to what the real world is capable. You see, God's chosen city, God's chosen people will in short order fall into the hands of the evil Assyrian Empire, and they will lose everything. They will be a people in exile, a people in exile again. And in this desert place, they will be a people at threat to lose their identity, to lose their purpose, to lose their promise. Leadership has failed the people of Israel. And God seems absurdly absent in this real world. They need a leader, one that will stand up and protect their land, a leader that can reinstill character and values to their identity, a leader that will lead them to victory. They need a king. They need someone that will restore them to respectability and renew their purpose as a people. Can you remember the day you woke up from your innocence? The day you came out of your crib? The day you came to meet the real world with its very real threats of stealing your identity, your purpose, your promise, your value, your dignity. We join Isaiah, don't we? We join Isaiah in a land under siege, in a world that has woken up to war, where innocence has been shattered. Maybe, perhaps, that very day is today for you. Maybe you came in today with your innocence shattered anew. Where you are not at peace at work, you're not at peace at home, you're not at peace in your thoughts, you're not at peace in your souls. Your very world seems at war. The world of work, of home, the world inside your mind, the world inside your heart. Leadership has failed us. And doesn't, when this happens, when we wake up to innocence shattered world, doesn't it feel that God seems absurdly absent? Maybe it's just the man I was texting last night, but for him, his actual words were, it does not feel that God is with me right now, Jake. I would imagine that we all feel that way at some point in time. I bet we feel that we need a king, a leader, to restore what has been ruptured and wrecked. Isaiah, knee-deep in failed expectations, in the shadow of the evil Assyrian Empire, he begins to see again. We remember from last week that Isaiah does not have normal eyes. He has eyes that see beyond seeing. He begins to see the world not as it is, but as God would have him see, with a fresh pair of eyes. Isaiah sees the king that Israel needs, the leader that they need, from the root of Israel's legacy leader, the root of Jesse, the bloodline of King David, comes a new branch of leadership that rests in the completeness and wholeness of God. Isaiah can see the character of this next leader. It's who they desperately need. Isaiah sees that the Spirit of the Lord would rest on this leader, bringing ruling attributes of wisdom and understanding. The Spirit would bring practical abilities of counsel and might and spiritual qualities of knowledge and fear. The Spirit of the Lord, you remember, the same one that hovered over the creation of the world and brought it into being and called it good, the Spirit of the Lord. You know, the same one in Genesis 2:7 that breathed into the nostrils of dust and brought forth humanity. That same Spirit, the Spirit of breathing dust and creating cosmos, would rest on this leader. The character of this leader would be marked by the very attributes of the divine, would have the very being of the divine creator, the great sustainer. This leader would lead like God created. I like that sentence. This leader would lead like God created. Let your imagination go there. Let your imagination go there. Do you remember Genesis chapter 1? God creates in 7 days, he creates, right? What does God create? Allow your imagination just for a moment to go there. What does he create and why does he create what he creates in Genesis chapter 1? Is there anything that the world needs that God does not create in the first chapter of Genesis? It's whole and it's good, right? God looks after each day of creation. God looks upon the creation and God says, what? That's good. This is good. This leader, the leader that Isaiah can see in the midst of destruction, this leader is going to lead in the same manner, in the same spirit that God creates. How complete. I wonder if this leader will lead the people into the same garden that God created. What peace would be there where all the animals just kind of play together, you know? I'm giving too much away. Then back to the script, man. Jeremy gets really, just stick to the script, bro. This leader would be good and whole, and John, this leader would be complete. I think that this is very important, that Isaiah's hope is not one that reaches inward, right? Western minds, I think that this is very important, because Isaiah's hope is not one that reaches inward, an internal hope, so to speak, simply satisfying psychological desires to feel secure, and in the process creating a kind of therapeutic deism where faith is an outside deity that makes us feel better about the poor condition we find ourselves. Isaiah's hope is not one that satisfies just his low self-esteem about feeling poor in a broken world. No, Isaiah's hope, Isaiah's faith extends out to what God will one day do when God shows up. What God will one day bring to pass with God's very presence. I'll get to this in a moment. Isaiah's hope, it extends to the clothes that God will one day wear. Isaiah lays all of his vision out into the world, a world God will one day inhabit. Faith and hope extend out from Isaiah's heart, beyond his self, and they extend out to a God who so loves this broken, innocent, shattered world that God gave his only son. Isaiah's many years, Isaiah, commas are important. Isaiah, many years before Jesus was born, envisioned what would happen when God shows up, wearing real clothes and entering a real world broken with shattered dreams, corrupt rules, oversexed cultures, polluted environments, a vicious and violent world. In those times, the clothes you wore marked the qualities of your character and the intentions of your purpose. If you're the note-taking type, I found this note in my study to be worth remembering, that the clothes you wore in those times in that culture, it marked the qualities of your character and the intentions of your purpose. Clothes told something about yourself. What you would wear would clue someone in on who you were and what you were about. This may be important to why Isaiah writes down in chapter 11 the clothes that this Messiah would wear. Many years before Jesus shows up in a lowly manger surrounded by animals and dignitaries, Isaiah sees that this coming leader would wear clothes of righteousness and faithfulness, and that he would rule on the side of the poor with justice and with fairness. He would judge the meek. Isaiah could see the Messiah and what he would wear on the day that he showed up. Let your imaginations go there. What do these clothes tell us about this coming leader? Well, that he would wear clothes that the marginalized would cast their hope in, and clothes that would draw out the sick and the beggar, the broken and the hurting. These clothes would be like a siren's call for the lost and the lonely. And here, at the feet of this humble leader, the people of the real and broken world would find justice and righteousness, fairness and faithfulness, innocence restored. The outward hope of Isaiah produced a picture of a God whose ultimate presence would be established for all the world. The ins and the outs, the vicious and the violent, the lost and the lonely. This coming king will one day be king for all. All the world, all the disadvantaged, all that are pained, all that are broken, all that are lost, all that are lame, all that need healed, all that have been burned by a world in love with lust and power and greed. Isaiah's vision is not one that simply satisfies his self-esteem. It's one that heals the cracks of an entire city. Isaiah's vision is not one that simply makes him feel better about himself after he comes to church at New Beginnings. Isaiah's vision is one that extends out beyond what the church can produce. It's a vision that heals the cracks of a city, that restores the marginalized to a place of importance. His hope is laid at the feet of a coming Messiah who will take all the world unto himself and offer restoration and redemption for all. In this Messiah, we call him Jesus. The lame will walk. The blind will see. The hungry will be fed. The lost will be saved. And in that Messiah, in Jesus, He will give us the Spirit, the same Spirit that created the cosmos, that hovered over dust and waters and breathed into the nostrils of humanity, that rest on his very Son. This Spirit will rest in the body of his believers. It will rest in you. Listen to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians. Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? 1 Corinthians 3:16. Do you not know? Do you not know that you, Don, you, Donnie, you, like, I don't know who you think I'm talking to. I'm talking to you. Don't you know, Kelsey, that God's very Spirit dwells in you, Alice? You are God's holy mountain. I know it takes years to understand. John 14:23, the words of Jesus. Those who love me and keep my word and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. How fascinating these two images of what goes out and what comes in. See, Isaiah's hope is not one that comes from his heart into his mind that satisfies him and makes him believe in Santa Claus. This is not the hope that he's writing about. A hope that in times of like struggle, we return back to our prayer closet and we pray until we feel good. This isn't what Isaiah's talking about. Isaiah's hope extends out from his very presence and being, from his very ontological self, out into something that he can't see but deeply trust in. It requires all that we are, not to satisfy our minds to make us feel good. It's almost like it's self-surrender, like Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, you know? It's like Isaiah's like, I am no longer in control of my hope. I will now cast it out into something I can't control. How bizarre. But look what happens in return. What happens in return is God doesn't come and just set inside a holy of holies that can be controlled and guarded. No, that God extends out from himself wherever God is, wherever God plays. That God comes out of that playground into your heart, Cindy. God comes to you, Jeremy, and it's not just that one day there'll be a place where we go, where we all hold hands and dance with vipers. It's that God who makes that happen comes to you, comes out from God's very being, and shares himself with me. What a scandal, Jason. I don't deserve it. You don't know me, but you come to know that I say words that hurt sometimes. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to. But I'm just a broken person. And sometimes I make mistakes too. Even as a pastor, I know pastors shouldn't make mistakes. You should have found a better pastor. But this pastor makes mistakes. I make them all the time. See, the scandal of God's gospel is that God comes out of the places that are perfect and comes into the places that are not to make me like the places that are perfect. I'm still under work. Well, it's pure gift, I tell you. It's pure grace, Roger. This holy mountain where justice and peace rule, where wisdom and understanding, counsel and might, knowledge and fear, where they dance, wherever that is, that holy mountain through the Spirit is given to us. God makes his home with us. Through the Spirit, these characteristics are cultivated in us. John 14:12, check this one out, James. Very truly I tell you, Jesus is saying this very truly, because no one else talks like that. Whenever you hear someone say very truly, you know it's only got to come from Jesus. Who else? Very truly, I tell you, The one who believes in me will also do the works that I do. And in fact, you ready? Here's the kicker. Bonnie, you'll do greater things than these. Ray, I think that we become the play place of peace for a real and broken world. Maybe said another way that Esther can understand. That Esther, we become the crib that the world can return to and play with things that are told that will hurt them. You, through the grace of Jesus Christ and the work of the Spirit, become a person of peace for a world that is wrecked. Amanda, you carry within you the very presence of Jesus Christ. And you, Nate, become, to the people that you meet, you become the place of peace where children can handle vipers. Where else? Don't take me literally. Don't go start a church where you're handling snakes now, okay? The image. Think like a kid here, right? Think like Isaiah. See beyond seeing. See a world that doesn't look like adults. See a world that looks like Hadley. And think about your very attributes being formed and shaped to be at the same level of peace that little Hadley has inside her crib. If I could just laugh like my daughter. If I could sleep. Right? How many of the sleep deprived in here? If I could just sleep like my daughter when she actually sleeps. She is so peaceful. It's like she doesn't worry Mark about anything. And she finds so much, Avery's the same age. You know this, right? She finds so much joy in boxes and wrappers and plastic and their imagination run wild. You know, one day Chase, it's on the case. Chase, the Paw Patrol guy, come on, parents in here know what I'm talking about. Chase will one day morph into real dogs. And Hadley will run by them on the street and she'll be scared to death of them. And she'll be on her morning jog and dogs will not be cute one day for her. They'll be scary. How I long for a Hadley when she gets old enough to jog down by the neighbor's crazy dog. How I long for her to see and envision a world where that dog becomes just like Chase all over again. And in our worlds, we're not, in our adult worlds, we don't deal with dogs. We deal with coworkers that act like dogs. I long for the day that we're so formed and shaped as New Beginnings Church, that you become God's holy mountain in that place of cubicles. That you become God's holy mountain out in the concrete yard. If you ever go to the concrete yard, Don, I don't know if you. I'm just kidding, of course. That you become, right? You become that place of peace where our dog-like co-workers can come lie down and find rest. They find rest in you. They find rest in the God that finds rest in you. Okay, that's enough, right? Let's just move on. I believe that you can become the leader that the world needs. I believe that New Beginnings Church can become the leader the world needs. A sign and symbol at the root of Jesse, a sign and symbol of Jesus. You, yes, even you. So, come. You who are weary and broken, you who are hungry and thirsty, you who are lame and sick, God's holy mountain is breaking into this world through Justin Main and through Pastor Megan and through Pastor Kevin and through Lizzie. God's holy mountain is breaking into the world for all who have lost their innocence. God has broken into you, and through the atoning work of Christ is restoring your innocence. And meanwhile, back at home, Hadley, and pure joy, leader of her peaceable kingdom, is at peace. Perhaps this is precisely why Isaiah paints this picture of the reign of God as a child at play with creation's wildest creatures, as if these beasts were merely animated animals stuffed with cotton and sewed with inviting smiles, as if there are no consequences for a child to reach their hand in a brood of vipers. Isaiah, with his eyes that see beyond seeing, can picture that the coming world will look like under the reign of this kind of leader. To be clear, it's not what he currently sees, but it's what he envisions the world to become when the Messiah takes reign and he can see it with a fresh pair of eyes. In fact, it looks just like Hadley at play in her crib. In Isaiah's vision, the wolf forgets its ravenous ways and lives alongside its culinary target, making peace with the lamb community. The leopard turns its competitive drive to lay down beside the goat. Once its goal, now they share a nest. The innocent and defenseless baby of the animal kingdom find a home inside the arms of a lion. The lion loses its identity as hunter, and the calf gains a lion's heart. Together, they rest in one another. This is brilliant. The cow and the bear, the lion and the ox, they eat a meal together from the same table, feast with friends. They share. The child puts their hand in a brood of vipers. Can you imagine Elizabeth taking little Esther, see how cute she is, she's the most precious thing in all the world, and putting her in a box full of vipers? The imagination of God is crazy, man. It's crazy. And all of this happens under the leadership of little Ezra Light. All of this happens under the leadership of a kid at play. I love God. Of course it does. Of course all of this happens under the leadership of a child. Because children don't know war. Not inherently. They only know tickle time and hide and seek and deep laughter with make-believe mice and firefighter dogs and cabbage patch dolls that always have time to play. Isaiah paints a picture of a world at peace. A similar peace to a child's innocence and a peaceful world in the embrace of a loving, knowledgeable creator. Isaiah describes this peaceful world in the backdrop of the type of character that will one day run things. And it begs the question, who is this that runs the world like my daughter runs her crib? In everyday life, the coming of the Lord is unfolding. And through the Spirit, it is unfolding in everyday people. This time, it comes to me in the way of my daughter, teaching me the way things will be, the way things can be, teaching me the spirit of the one who has come, who has shown up, teaching me the characteristics of the way of Christ, laughter, joy, rest, and peace, with the very image of things the world would have us believe could one day hurt us. Let us pray.